But what you're trying to show is that you're committed to getting the outcome. And if the customer knows that you've got that commitment and that you're building that focus on getting the outcomes that even in some cases they're not aware of, they don't know that they need something, but you know it as a business because you've engaged and you've got multiple teams that you're working with inside that customer, and you can see that they need something and preempt that, then you're in a position as a salesperson that's like this special kind of golden triangle where you can see what the customer needs before they do, you can deliver it, and then you can show them how to get the outcome that they need from that. And so that's our nirvana. That's where we try to be.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Welcome to the Redefining Sales podcast, where we reimagine and redefine sales in a digital world. Welcome to the Redefining Sales Podcast. My name is Abby White. I'm the CEO of Sales Redefined and your host for the Redefining Sales Podcast. Today, I have a guest who I am so excited to bring to you. We have on the show today, Paulo M. Malokas, which I really struggled to pronounce and he had to explain it to me. Paulo is the co-founder of Olympus Technology Services. And Olympus Tech have been on the most phenomenal growth journey. And I just have been dying to get Paulo on to really unpack their journey. So since starting in July 2016, these guys have been doubling year after year after year after year. And in only, what's that, sort of 7 short years, they have built a multi-million dollar business, which has been listed on the AFR Fast Starter for a couple of years now. They also this year have made the AFR Top 100. And I really wanted to unpack with Paulo, whether in technology or not, doesn't matter. I wanted to unpack what are some of their key success factors that have led to that astronomical growth? How have they retained their core values whilst being on a hyper-growth journey? What does he think it takes to have that hyper-growth journey? Paulo also flips on its head a lot of traditional thinking around sales, which I love. I really love that challenging thinking. So they've actually achieved that multi-million dollar growth, not by building out large sales teams, but actually changing their thinking across the whole entire team about how they approach the customer and how they think about the role of sales. So I don't want to give away too much because Paulo unpacks it beautifully as we get into this conversation. So a little bit about Paulo. Prior to co-founding Olympus Tech, he had been in various different roles across the IT industry for a number of years, from account director, territory sales manager in some channel partners, to business manager at Ingram, which is one of the distributors in the IT industry, and then starting Olympus Tech, which focuses on IT technology services and IT infrastructure consulting and services. So in this conversation, you are going to hear so much about scaling, growth, factors for success, key attributes that Paulo looks for as he hires, and how you navigate the journey to becoming an AFR top 100. So grab a pad and a pen. I was taking heaps of notes in this conversation, and enjoy. Welcome to the podcast and to the Redefining Sales podcast. This week, we have Paulo M. Pliokas, which I've just been learning. And Paulo's going to tell me how to say it with the Greek pronunciation that I can't do.
Yeah, Pliokas.
I've got no chance. No chance. I'll just leave it to you. You do it much better than I can. So Paulo, I am so excited to have you here today with us. I've been following your journey for years so closely and just absolutely love everything you guys are doing. So thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Abby. I'm really pleased to be here. It's a pleasure to be able to chat to you and to share some of what we've done over the last few years.
Awesome. So I am going to get stuck straight in. And one of the main reasons, there's lots of reasons, but one of the main reasons I asked Paulo to come on is Olympus Technology Services have had the most phenomenal growth story on the planet that whether you're in IT or not, I just think there's so much all of us, including myself, we can learn from. So a couple of fun facts for you. Olympus Technology Services have been pretty much, I think, doubling year on year on year every year. And Paulo can fill in the gaps in a sec. You have been in the AFR Fast Starter. You this year are going into the AFR Top 100. The growth has just been like off the charts. And what you've achieved in a few years that you've actually been in business is what it takes most people 20, 30 years to achieve. So firstly, like, congratulations on that. And secondly, can you unpack a little bit of that for us in terms of there must be so many contributors to growth, but if you had to boil it down, what do you think are some of the 2-3 contributors that have led to that unbelievable success?
Thanks, Abby. That's such a great intro. A little bit embarrassed at the growth and where we've gotten to, but it's really cool to be running a business that's been able to grow at that sort of rate over the last 7 years since we started back in 2016, particularly with the last couple of years and the pandemic and everything that's been happening. Well, our growth has sustained and if not increased. We've made the AFR Top 100 this year, the AFR Fast Starters last year. We've treated our business like a startup since obviously we started up in 2016. We're now a little bit beyond the startup. We've got, just over 30-odd staff full-time in the business across Sydney, Melbourne and Brisbane here in Australia. Our growth has been really focused on our customers, and I think that's really the reason why we've been able to grow. We talk about being customer-centric and having customer centricity in everything that we do. And so our business has been tied very, very closely to our core customers, understanding their needs and being able to address them. I think one of the key things that I hear a lot about why customers come back to us, it's down to two key aspects. And the first one is that we understand the customer's business. It sounds pretty simple, sounds pretty basic, but understanding your customers and knowing what drives them and what's important to them allows us as a supplier of products and services to be in sync with them and to make sure that we're not trying to sell them things that they don't need, not trying to, have them waste time on proposals or quotes or services that may not help affect or sort of drive more of their business. So understanding our customers is really the key thing. And we put the customers in the middle of everything that we do in the business. And so because of that, what we find is that we roll with the changes at our customers. And that means that the flexibility that we have, which is the second main thing, our flexibility and our ability to work with the customer's needs as they change, that's allowed us to be sticky and maintain those relationships since we started. So the majority of our customers have been with us for a number of years. And as we add customers via our organic growth, we haven't done that by hiring a bunch of salespeople. We've done that by broadening the breadth of products and solutions that we sell to our customers and the support and after sales service that we provide. So our growth has come both on the back of adding more customers, but also adding more services and solutions to our existing customers. And the reason why that's great for us and great for our customers is that those services and offerings are tailored and fitting with those customers' needs. So I think that's been one of the core reasons why we've been able to grow at such a rate. Obviously, there's a large number of options for customers these days. People do a lot of research online. They understand what their needs are and then can go to market, whether it's via formal or informal tenders. But for us, it's building that rapport and understanding of the customers that has really proven the difference. I was going to just say one more thing. The other thing is our team are focused on the customer outcomes. So we don't have a sales team per se in our business. The way that we've sort of worked is to ensure that everyone is focused on sales and they all understand that the engagement and support that we offer our customer is what drives our business.
So I literally have so many notes to unpack everything you just said. I'm scribbling at super speed. I want to ask about that. Okay. So I want to unpack this because the first piece around customer centric, right? It's kind of buzzword bingo in that we all go, oh, we're customer centric and customer focused.
Yeah.
I've obviously, been quite close watching your journey and had the pleasure of spending time with your team. And I actually want to unpack a couple of examples to bring this to life, because I think that we can all go, yeah, we're customer centric. Yeah, customer centric is one of our values. And I think it's kind of is cheap. And I think what my observation of Olympus Technology Services is that you guys literally would pretty much give your firstborn child to help the customer.
Not quite, but...
Well, I don't know. We'll talk to your wife about it. See how she's feeling towards your son this week. Yep. But like two examples that spring to mind for me During COVID, when there was all the issues with couriers and we couldn't get supply and your customer desperately needed something. Tell me if I've got the story right, but your brother who's in the business hired a van to go personally to the courier to pick up what the customer had ordered and what they needed, to personally drive it to them. You then realized, right, we can't rely on you guys. We need logistics. You've had people send you photos going, I need one of these things, don't know what it is. And even if it's one, you guys aren't, oh, well, you know, we're too important to get out of bed for one of whatever it might be. And so I think that I kind of really want to unpack this customer centricity because it's just too cheap. Whereas you guys actually literally will hire a van, get on a plane. I've seen George, your brother, fly on a plane to help customers with like one PC or something like that. It's just like the customer's interest off the charts. Talk to us about that a bit.
Yeah, so look, it's really interesting, right? So the little things really matter, and from little things, big things come, right? And that's the kind of way that we've been working. We've got this neon sign in our kitchen here in our office, and we've got it, and it says, it's us. And the It's Us kind of tag has come from the fact that when we're talking to our customers and they have a problem and they need it solved, we kind of say, yeah, it's us. We'll get it solved. And so the example that you've given has become not the norm, but it's what we expect of ourselves. We expect to delight our customers and to exceed their expectations with regards to delivery. We don't want to be industry standard. We want to set the standard. And so being able to respond at speed with understanding and knowledge of our customer, I go back to understanding your customers, that's really critical, right? Being able to do that and being able to, know that when a request comes through for a particular system or a product or a solution and the customer is saying this is urgent and it's something that's also important, that, we go to, I guess, to whatever lengths it takes for us to solve that problem. So you're right. We've hired our own vans. We've driven in those vans, in cars. We've put people on planes. During COVID, the last couple of years, we were doing work both inside healthcare, government, utilities. Those places didn't shut down. They got busier, right? And so those places, everywhere from state governments, local governments, through the healthcare, aged care. I had a networking tech. I'll give you another example. I had a networking tech who needed to go in and replace a switch inside an aged care home. And the issue was that switch, it runs some critical services in the aged care home. You've got nurse call, you've got telephone, you've got other things. But the home was in lockdown because of a COVID outbreak. So our tech put on full PPE, not just the mask and the shield, but the gown and the whole gear. Went into the computer rooms and, set all this stuff up and spent a day working on site and then had to sort of bounce out. In order to do that, we had to kind of sit down and do a risk assessment, understand what the customers need. Is it urgent? Yes. How do we solve it? Okay, this is how we can solve it. We put, the technology and the people on site to get it done. The same with George doing some stuff with New South Wales government, jumping on a plane and flying to Outback New South Wales, effectively, to replace one screen, but actually taking two just in case one of them was cracked or there was a problem, right? So understanding the customer and their needs, and for that person working out at that site, it was like, wow, that's amazing. Somebody's actually come out to see me rather than just fling a box across the state and hope that we can set it up. So that personalized touch, that pride in what we do, the understanding of our customer, all of those things go to, showing the type of business that we are and extending it from just providing a quote on a piece of paper or on an email with a service. And when the customer understands it, that's the level of investedness that we have in their business, in their needs, then that's why they come back. And so our business is at core, at its like absolute sort of center, customer centric. If the customer says this thing is, it's business critical, it's mission critical, it's business impacting, or, hey, it's actually just a real pain in the ass and I need somebody else to fix it for me. That's the kind of stuff that we've been doing. So again, selling a piece of technology, there's lots of different widgets from lots of different manufacturers and vendors, and they can all solve and fulfill a need. But it's that human aspect. It's the understanding of the customer, understanding that, yeah, when you turn up to site, there might not be anyone there. And so we need to be able to act as the customer would expect. So they're all examples of the way that we try to drive customer centricity through our business. Our team now see it as the norm. It's not something that you need to get approval for. You don't need to come to me as the business owner and say, hey, Paulo, can I jump in a car and drive this thing over there? Can I have a van? We do that as part of what we do. Again, one of the other things that I've learned is that if we're in sync with our customers to that level, the commercials will flow on after the fact. We don't have to constantly say, sorry, we can't do anything and you need to send us a PO or an order. We understand based at that level, when we're in the midst of the pandemic, we had an understanding that everyone had to do something extraordinary. Everyone had to kind of extend themselves. And as a business, we added more people to our team so that we can continue doing that for our customers. So that's really the core of where we've gone and how we've grown, because we do things that are a little bit different.
Okay, I've got more questions on this piece of paper now. Right, Paulo, I'm kidnapping you for the day. Cancel your meetings. So after I said to Paulo, I'll be quick. You knew I was lying. You knew it would never happen. So, okay, tapping into this. How do you make sure that as you're scaling, as you're growing, because it's no longer just you, obviously George is senior in the business, and I get you guys people, that's very much you, but you're now 30 odd people. So how do you maintain that culture as you're scaling? And because what I think is interesting about some of the businesses that we see is you might have that ethos when you're small, maybe you'll have it when you're 10 people, 15 people, but sometimes you can lose it a little bit as you scale beyond that. So how do you maintain that in the extended team?
Yeah, so there's a couple of parts to that. The first one is you have to take care of your people. Again, that extends to yourself. And again, I'm probably the worst at it in making sure that I have the relevant amount of downtime and can balance work and life. Like, work is life. I think that's kind of my motto. Life is work, goes both ways. But understanding that people have, you know, lives throughout the beginning of our business to today, we've maintained and continue to maintain that work is not a place, it's a thing that you do. And for us, the things that we do are deliver outcomes for our customers. And so we can deliver those outcomes from an office, whether it's in CBD, remotely interstate, at a customer site, or from home, or from the cafe. That doesn't kind of change. On top of that, the way that we work amongst the team, we have a very flat structure, and that's kind of typical of smaller businesses. But as we grow, again, what we're trying to do is just chunk down our business into, you know, groups that can work autonomously, but actually understand where they fit within the broader scheme of what it means to be part of Olympus Tech. And so each of our groups have got their own, particular sort of focus, whether it's, you know, modern workplace solutions or networking or our data center team or, you know, our sales admin team. They understand where they fit inside the business and they can work independently and be delivering output, not just for the business, but for our customers, wherever and however they need to. And so our work hours are flexible. Our locations are flexible. And so what that's done is it's also brought in a diverse team. We've got grads who've just started or are still at uni. We've got industry vets that have been doing it for 25 and 30 years. And we've got everything in between. And so we've got some of the younger, I call them kids, some of the younger kids teaching us and mentoring us in the reverse, right? Teaching us about social media and the different happenings around, you know, the world. And then you've got some of us old timers who've got less hair than when we started, kind of talking to them about the good old days and maybe things that we used to do and the experiences that we've built. And so for us, it's really a meld of all of that. Our roles are quite fluid. You know, there are, you know, hazy sort of lines between what my job is versus what the next person's is. But what that does, it helps us understand the roles that are required for us to deliver the outcomes for our customers. And so as you scale, you need to kind of more clearly define people's roles. You need to give those responsibilities to people. They then need to be accountable and measurable and, you know, focused on delivering those pieces in the bigger puzzle. But those pieces have always been there since the beginning. One of the really important things, and this is really difficult, it's to be kind to yourself, right? And as a business owner and as a management team, you know, we're the worst critics for ourselves, or like we're our harshest critics. You know, some days we sit there and we're, you know, working through a problem and we're really at each other trying to get to why we're doing certain things and how we do it. But you need to stop sometimes and take a step back and look at the sort of broader picture and go, actually, we're doing okay. And the outcome is getting to where it needs to be. So for us, being constantly critical and critiquing and revising and reviewing and improving every day a little bit at a time is kind of how we work. But we also have to stop and kind of consider, actually, we've, you know, we're doing okay. We're engaging and interacting with our customers, and being able to stop and, you know, reflect a little bit every now and then actually helps us sort of make sure that as we're scaling and growing, that the investments are going in the right place, that the right team members have got the right skills, because there's a lot of upskilling that we're doing. And so that's the other thing. We don't hire for like the, let's say the aptitude in a particular test or a particular technology. It's all attitude, right? It's all about desire to be part of something. It's all about desire to, you know, be another person at Olympus that can delight and excite our customers. So as we build and grow, the people that have come in, the people that have sort of built, you know, more of their careers here at Olympus Tech over the last 7 years have been able to do that and have been able to grow as people and as professionals inside the company. And what that means is the people are scaling, you know, in themselves. And so people are getting better and faster, and we're then layering things in like automation and tools and systems. But it's not just the systems and processes, it's the people. And for us, that scale, being customer-centric, understanding the needs of our clients, going to the nth degree to make it happen with a group of people who can make decisions for themselves with the customers, who can go that extra mile, you know, that's how we've been able to scale the way we have.
Yeah, it's incredible. Oh, so many parts I want to unpack. So I want to just revisit the part you just said around, you made a really important point around commercially, it will flow on. That you guys, I'm going to assume, right? I'm going to put the words in your mouth. I'm going to assume some of the time flying George to the outback with two screens is not the most profitable, you know, best thing to do. And
yeah.
We could have a bit of fun with that with George, your brother. We could take the mickey on that. But anyway, I'm guessing it's not the most profitable thing. But it's interesting your mindset of going, actually, even those little things that on the surface, it's like, well, that's crazy because that's just not even profitable. That's an insane use of his time. Actually, you guys will reap the rewards later and make sure that actually as an account, it's profitable, but that little minute thing might not be. Do you see where I'm going with this? So I think as a business owner, that sometimes you do look at things and go, on the surface of it, it's crazy. There's a better way to do this. But actually from the customer-centric perspective, there's no better way. How do you navigate that?
So I've got two things. Let me ask you a question, Abby. Are you a gambler?
No.
No, so not
unless you count starting a business as gambling, because I kind of feel like it is.
Well, there you go, right? So you've got to back yourself, right? And so again, here in Australia, we have this whole gambling sort of a culture and history. I don't think it's a gamble if you back yourself to get something done, right? If you believe in yourself and you have that right belief and you've got the right people around you, then good things happen, right? And so when it comes to commercial realities in the world, we have to make profit to keep the business going. And we've invested every profit dollar that we've made in this business back in this business to keep it growing and to scale, because we're scaling that from within, right? And as we scale and grow the business from within, those investments come back to the people that we hire, the locations that we sort of grow into and the like. But the other thing that I was going to say is when you think about it from a sales perspective, and I'm a salesperson, right? I'll put my hand up and say, hey, I'm a sales guy, I get it, right? But when you think about it from a sales perspective, the big picture is really what you're always going for. You're not just going for that one sale. You're not trying to make or break a business or an engagement with a client based on putting somebody on a plane and sending them to the outback to deliver something. But what you're trying to show is that you're committed to getting the outcome. And if the customer knows that you've got that commitment, and that you're building that focus on getting the outcomes that even in some cases they're not aware of. They don't know that they need something, but you know it as a business because you've engaged and you've got multiple teams that you're working with inside that customer, and you can see that they need something and preempt that. Then you're in a position as a salesperson that's like this special kind of golden triangle where you can see what the customer needs before they do, you can deliver it, and then you can show them how to get the outcome that they need from that. And so that's our nirvana. That's where we try to be. We try to be in a position where we can, again, understand the customer holistically, know the things, the moving parts within the business that they need from us, and maybe what they need from other partners, and, you know, prompt that and make that happen. And when you can make things happen on behalf of the customer, they leave it to you. They ask you to do it. It's almost like saying, actually, you're, again, one of these marketing hype things, you're our trusted partner. We believe that you understand what it is that we're trying to achieve and what we need to deliver. So our business is really focused on that. And when you break it down to a per individual sale, yeah, it probably doesn't make sense putting people on planes and flying them around the country to do stuff. But that's what we did. And we did that during COVID as well. And we engaged specifically around projects that had to continue and be delivered when people were in lockdown, when we couldn't go to places. We had to do all the things that were necessary for us to maintain our business, but specifically to assist and support our customers. And when you look at that, again, you know, and you look at the weightings, like the cost or the price that people pay, you know, maybe that weighting is now becoming less and less in the grand scheme of things. And it's more important that you understand what they need, you can deliver that on time, and that you can get the outcome that they need in a manner that is conducive to their business. So for us, from a commercials perspective, the commercials flow on. And what I mean by that, and why I asked whether or not you're a gambling person, is because if you're willing to risk the fact that, hey, you're spending a couple thousand bucks to send somebody on a plane, but you know that that's going to build and cement the engagement, then that's not a gamble, right? That's an investment. And so rather than spending marketing dollars or rather than doing advertising, you're investing that money in your customer. And that's a real critical difference. Rather than trying to go out there and buy a list of customers to sell to, delight your customers. Make them want to work with you because you're giving them something that they sometimes expect you to fail. They think, no, you're not going to be able to do that. You can't deliver that to us this week because, like, there's no way. How is a courier going to deliver that? You know, we can't get stuff delivered and we've been waiting for weeks. Okay, get them on a plane and get it out there. And then, like, wow, how did you do that? There's always a way. It's just a matter of whether or not you're willing to accept that cost as either an investment or as a, as a cost of the business. And I look at those sorts of things as investments in our customers.
Oh, I love it. Okay, well, you won't see me at Crown Casino, but you'll see me gambling. So the next one that I think is a superpower for you guys is, I think speed is one of your superpowers. I have seen you guys, you know, where there might be an industry standard for, hey, we'll do next day. And actually even that sometimes is glorified quoting. It can be 2-3 days to quote. I've seen you guys commit to do 2 hours, which is almost a little bit back to what you were talking about before, is there's almost a theme occurring here of like achieving the impossible and pulling a rabbit out of the hat that isn't even, you know, like you said earlier, it's almost raising the bar and raising the standard. So I'm curious about how you maintain your speed, but without everyone burning out and causing havoc. Because I think, that, again, speed is something that I've observed from you guys early days, but I think you've still maintained it as an outsider. I'd say you've still maintained it. So talk to me about speed.
Yeah, so speed, agility, flexibility, all of those kind of sort of come together, right? And what I put it down to is knowledge and knowledge of place. So understanding what your customer needs, if you know what they're asking for and you've got that sort of in train, and you know that when you get that call or that vague email saying, can you please quote us X? Like we actually know what that X is because we've either touched it or we're working around it or we've been engaged, you know, in scoping that. Or we might get something completely random and the question is, hey, we're trying to solve this problem, and we love problems, right? We love to solve problems. But being able to do that at speed with agility and with intent and being able to say, okay, here are the options and here's how we can present, the solution for you. A lot of businesses can sometimes end up in paralysis by analysis, right? They kind of go, oh, there's lots of different ways and we need to have 15 meetings and a bunch of committees and talk about, you know, what we do and when we do it. For us, it's knowing that there are a couple of ways to solve every problem, but also understanding contextually for that customer, option A doesn't sit well, doesn't fit. Option B is better. So then we go and focus on option B and we know that we can present that quickly. So it's a combination of understanding the customer, being able to address the requirement quickly, being able to then back that up with our relationships and partnerships that we have in place with our suppliers and vendors and partners, and being able to make a call, knowing that, okay, we're going to be able to provide this. Can we provide this in X period of time? Do we have the right skills? Are the right resources available? Is it in stock? You know, there's a issue with fulfillment of all sorts of things these days with, you know, the way the market has been. And being able to source from multiple places, being able to leverage my experience in distribution and wholesale, being able to call on different partners to help solve the problem. Again, that's the other thing. Sometimes people go, well, I could do it, but, you know, my guy is busy, or the people that are in-house are busy. For our customer, if we've got a trusted partner that we believe in, that they can fulfill that outcome, we're open to that. And so this is the other thing. We're open to partnering and being able to deliver something because we know it's the right thing for the customer. It might not be as commercially viable. It might not be as profitable. But if we are willing to back that outcome and we've got the engagement, we do it. And the reason why we do it is because it's the right thing for the customer. And then the next time when we've got more resources or whatever, we then bring those to bear. So for us, there's lots of options always available to us. Being able to understand the need is the first thing. And we, you know, we can get there really quickly because we know these customers well. Then building up on that, being able to then back that out to our partners and suppliers to then deliver the outcome. And then commercially, we're not trying to boil the ocean here. We're trying to provide an outcome, provide a solution, and get the return that we want based on the invested time and effort, and then move on to the next thing and keep that sort of turning. So as we build and grow our business, it's really about maintaining that velocity. And I know that you're in a, or you've been in sort of high-performing sales team, and that time to sale, I can give you an example. I've gone from zero to $1 million order in 8 hours, right?
And
And so that's where there was a critical issue and we were looking for solutions and we went to our network looking for ways to solve it. And out of the partners that we had, one of the manufacturers could deliver based on the timeline that, again, it was a different product. It needs some additional support and services, but it's solving a critical problem for a client. And by the time we put in the relevant sort of request to when we got the order, it was 8 hours. And that's because at that type of criticality, in that sort of level of visibility within the business, they said, hey, we trust that the team are working on this together with us. We understand the requirements. Make it happen. And so we then work hard to get that to occur. So from our side, it's really about being able to provide value, and being able to provide value at speed sets us apart from other partners who can still do the same job, but it might take them 2 or 3 times as long.
Yeah, and I think the speed is a biggie. Like, I've noticed that with you guys, like speed of everything, and that you guys have sustained that. And that kind of brings me to, you know, navigating the hyper growth journey that you guys have been on and, you know, doubling year on year, every single year. You know, when you're scaling at that speed, my experience of it is certain things start to break and you've got to change stuff and it's exhausting and it's all those things. So what would be some of your advice to how you navigate that hyperspeed and scaling journey?
Yeah, look, let me sort of firstly say that, yeah, some things break in our business as well, right? So we're not perfect. We're far from it. But again, I think I mentioned this before, it's important to kind of be kind to our team and to ourselves and understand that we're not always going to be able to scale ourselves and our, you know, there's only so many hours in the day that you can work. There's only so many hats that you can wear. And as a startup business, you wear multiple hats and you work day and night to make it happen. Once you get past that stage and you've got a team around you, and the team is now delivering a lot of those outcomes and a lot of those tasks and activities on a daily basis, it's still about finding the next thing that you need to then scale and grow. And so for us, it's about having the right people in the business that act as multipliers through the business and can maintain the same level of investedness in what we're doing, can really sort of stay true to the picture of where we're going and what we're trying to achieve, but then also understanding where our limitations are. And so the people that we bring into the business to help pick up some of these pieces as we go and as we scale have to do with the technologies and the solutions that we're selling in some cases. So we've got more techs and more people that are able to deliver. But in some cases, it's even more basic than that, more sales, more admin, more kind of process, people that are looking after customer service or support. And what we do there is we're basically saying, hey, look, we can't do everything. We understand that we don't have all the solutions in-house. You know, again, bringing on a finance person, bringing on HR, bringing on, you know, more service delivery and services people, all of that adds to the way that business grows and scales. But picking where you invest in the next hire and understanding what my limitations were as a business owner and founder, hey, I wasn't in HR, I wasn't, you know, running a service desk and things like that, but I know people who can do that. So let's go and build the relationships and understand how people can then take those skills on from us. So the real interesting thing is going from a startup entrepreneur kind of run business to now being a medium-sized company with a team that acts and behaves like their own sort of sets of startups. And so we're starting up different parts within our business and then scaling them and growing them and then doing the same thing for the next group. And so that's when I mentioned earlier, chunking down different parts and tasks in our business, that's how we're thinking about that. So for me, growth is whatever you want it to be. You know, you could grow from zero to 50, 100, $200 million, depending on, you know, what the market allows and where you can scale to. But so long as we have a differentiation in the market, and I think we do based on our customer focus, our agility, our speed, the lengths that we'll go towards getting the outcome, those things differentiate us, right? And then making sure that we are technically capable and that our customers believe in us. And the only way to do that is to retain and double down on that focus that you have around the customers, understanding them and being able to build from there. So as we scale and as we grow, you know, you can, you know, spread yourself too thin, or you can stay too focused and too narrow and only do one thing and do that really well. Great. But what we've done is we've turned that on its head a little bit and said, okay, in technology, it's a pretty broad market, but what do our customers need? What areas of technology are they looking at to leverage, and how do they need support from a services partner like Olympus Tech? And so when we focused on that, you know, we said, are we, and we did this a couple of years ago where we brought our team together and we said, are we going to retain and focus on our, hey, we put the customer in the middle and then build our solutions and offerings around it? Or are we going to go back to that traditional model where you build your different solutions and then you've got your go-to-market and your sales team? We said, no, we don't want to do that. That's, you know, that's old. Let's focus on our customers and work with them to get the outcomes that they need. And now we've grown and grown and grown, and everyone that comes into the business has got a customer outcome in mind. And so they're there to deliver services and support for our customers and continue to grow the business. And so, you know, after 7 years, we haven't stopped growing. So we're doing something right.
Yeah, no, you definitely are. So I want to touch on that in a little bit more detail, because you said before that actually you haven't grown by just adding stacks and stacks of salespeople, which is unusual, right? And intrigues me to the nth degree. Now, I know your team, and I know that you really do embed that everybody is in sales culture. Mm-hmm. So talk to us about that piece, because I think that's I think it's hard to do, to get everybody in sales culture. I think we can all say it and it sounds easy. It's another one of those, but it's hard to actually achieve. And I think you've also done an interesting model where you've not just thrown salespeople at the problem. So talk to us about that.
Yeah. So one thing I learned a while back was that customers don't like salespeople. And I think maybe it was...
You mean they don't like you and me? What?
Yeah. But I think... As an individual, like if somebody is trying to sell to you, you know, we automatically put up barriers. And my job and the way that I've treated, the way that we wanted to run this business, has always been about taking away barriers to business. And as we take away those barriers, what that's allowed us to do is realize that you really don't need a salesperson to maintain and build a relationship with a customer or understand the customer's needs. You need your business to do that. Like, your whole business needs to understand that. And so you need a technical account manager, or you need a technical support manager. You need your service delivery manager. You need your customer advocate. You need your customer outcomes manager. You need your finance team. Like, you need the warehouse guys, the delivery team. You need everyone to understand the customers, insofar as when they touch the customer in all of those different roles and tasks across the business that we have today, that it's in sync and in tune with the customer end. So when we put an asset sticker on a box and send it out, or when we ship something, we know the site that we're shipping to. We understand the challenges of shipping to a mine site in, you know, country Queensland or New South Wales, and we can actually make allowances for that at the delivery end or at the warehouse end or when we're ordering. So for us, being able to build sales and get repeat business, because that's what we've been doing. We've been building repeat business. We're not an MSP, and so we're not into the whole, hey, let's go the recurring, you know, billing cycle and billing model where we just send bills to customers. Everything is like our first and last order with our customer. So we treat it that way. We need to make sure that it makes sense, that it's relevant, it's priced correctly, and that from, you know, scope to sale and to delivery, it kind of matches all the way along. And so that's the kind of mentality that we take. So everyone is in sales, right? When you turn up to site to plug something into a rack, you're in sales. When you're picking up the phone, answering a customer service call, you're in sales. When you're the managing director or owner of the business talking to the directors and owners, you're in sales. So it's, everybody has to maintain and understand that the way we represent our business builds that identity. And so when, you know, we wear a lot of branded gear, you know, over here, Olympus Tech. And so, you know, we're trying to build the brand and have some meaning behind the brand, right? And having the meaning being that anyone who's wearing the brand and representing Olympus Tech to our customers can, you know, have a conversation with the customer around something that they might need, help them to deliver an outcome, try and solve a problem. And we're not limiting that to only one part of the business. We're not limiting those conversations around futures just with the sales team. We're empowering the entire team, from the solutions consultants, architects, engineers, to the tech team, to have those discussions across the board. And what we're finding is that as we integrate that across the board more and more, the way that we work with our customers changes. We stop having the sales, them and us. And it's, again, it's us as a group. It's collectively, it's us. We sit down around the table and we work out, what does the customer need? How do we solve that problem? How do we deliver the outcome? And then invariably, when we're talking to our IT or operations or support contacts, their customers are the users and the businesses, and in some cases, the consumers that they sell to or work with. And so how do we help them get their outcomes faster, you know, with less hassle, with less stress? And so that's really where we're always in sales. And so from our, you know, from me right the way through to the whole business, the ethos is really that we are all in sales, that we all have a role to play in maintaining that relationship and engagement with our customers. And we've gone one extra step, which is kind of crazy in a business that's focused on sales. We don't deploy sales targets to the team, right? So we have a company sort of target, a goal. You know, we all buy into that, and we try and grow our business. And we've been doing that now consecutively for 7 years. And so the focus from the team is, hey, we want to solve those problems for our customers. We want to get the outcome for them. We want to deliver the solution. And in some cases, yeah, we're doing stuff on its own that might look commercially not practical, not viable. But in the grand scheme of things, the business will continue to grow profitably in and of itself. And that's testament to the fact that you don't need a whole bunch of salespeople that you whack over the head with a big stick with a cadence every week about where's your pipeline and how many deals have you got in your funnel. We've got pipeline of business. It's about addressing that business and making sure that the outcomes for the customer is what they need. And so that's how we've been able to grow in a steady and consistent manner, albeit at a pretty alarming rate.
So ground level, you hire Bob day one.
Yep.
How do you embed that ethos? Because particularly, I'm going to make a mass generalization, right? People are going to hate me, but mass generalization. If we give an IT example, sometimes people from the technical background Well, I'm not a salesperson. Sales is yuck. Sales is disgusting.
Yeah.
Right? That's not me. I'm not a salesperson. So how at sort of that ground level do you embed that ethos across the whole business that everyone buys into it? Because you've got to have something. Yeah, that's not my job.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. We hired a senior technical consultant who's worked in the industry for a bunch of years. And again, we're a softly, as you come in kind of approach. We don't expect a lot from people to, you know, you've got to go through really rigorous kind of training and onboarding and stuff. We kind of just want you to sort of get used to the place and the craziness that is Olympus Tech, right? And so after a couple of months, we sat down with this gentleman and said, so how do you feel? It's like, hey, I love the place, the vibe, the atmosphere, the kind of the whole thing. I've got a question for you though, Paulo. I'm like, yeah, what is it? He's like, how do you get sales? Right? and he's like, I don't understand it. Like there's more orders and more things coming in and the business is growing. We're hiring more people. How are these sales coming about? Like I'm in my technical world. I've got this delivery focus and solutions and solutioning and architecting. Where are these sales coming from? And I'm like, hey, they're coming from you and they're coming from the rest of the team because the customers have got belief and trust in us as a business. They understand that we sometimes have knowledge that they don't. They know that we're not going to pitch to them always and that the way that we work with our customers is to build out what their needs are and then start working on how to deliver them. And then that happens once, it happens a second time, then somebody else catches wind of that inside the customer and then they build that out. And so again, we work with medium to large size, you know, Australian-based businesses, government and the like. And so there's separate sort of silos and streams within each of these businesses that sometimes, you know, you might be a supplier in one and never talk to anyone in the other. Well, that gets cross-pollinated from within for us. And the fact that we're in talking to customers often, sometimes they say, who's that guy? And why do you keep talking to him? And they're like, oh, that's, you know, such and such from Olympus Tech. And they do these things for us. Oh, okay. Maybe they could help us out with X, Y, and Z. And so when I kind of sat down and I got asked that question, I was kind of dumbfounded because I'm like, it just happens. Like we're engaged with customers and we interact with them and we're talking to them. He goes, yeah, but, you know, you don't have a big sales force. You're not out there sort of chasing sales. We're not constantly hearing about sale. And I'm like, well, yeah, who wants to hear about that? And which customers want to be sold to? Nobody wants to get that kind of interaction from their supplier or their partners. And so we've got customers that we've spoken to 3 years ago or 4 years ago, and we did something for them, and then they were happy. They've got either a third party doing managed services for them or they've done it themselves. And we check in on them every so often to say g'day and see how they're going and talk to them. We're not all about trying to activate and trying to, you know, get the next sale. We just leave them be because they're people as well, and they've got to deal with their own dramas. But sometimes we get a call out of the blue, or we'll get a text message, or we'll get a phone call or an email, and they're like, hey, how are you going? Can you help us out with something? We're like, yep, great. Tell us why. Tell us the situation. What's changed? Help us understand things a little bit quicker, and then we kind of build on that. And when you've done that a few times with a few customers, then what we found is that we've got this constant wave of business that's rolling through over, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years now. And so we've come back to those customers that we were dealing with 5, 6, 7 years ago, and now that's sort of rolling. And now the snowball effect, things are getting bigger as they go. And instead of just dealing with 5 customers or 10, you're now dealing with 50 or 100, and then that starts to scale. And then you've done things not once, but you've done things 2, 3, 4, 5 times. And then for us, we're able to do that faster now because we've got, you know, the knowledge, the know-how, the skills, we've got the collateral, we understand how to scope and design things. You know, some of these are complex projects and they come up within customers of the size that we deal with once every 3 to 5 years, once every 4, 5, 6 years, right? And so the fact that we've now done this a number of times, business hasn't slowed down. And so from a sales perspective, it's about saying, okay, as we formalize and define these services because we've done them on a repeat basis, and as we've built out the efficiency of our business being able to scope and design things, we're getting better at closing those pieces of business. And so then that's snowballing and accelerating our growth rather than slowing us down. So the fact that we don't have as many salespeople, you know, might say, well, you know, if you hire a bunch of salespeople, well, you can go and talk to all those customers and get them to buy stuff from you. Sure, but then that will mean I need another 20 delivery people as well, and then I need a whole bunch more. And so from our side, we're growing at a rate that's consistent. It's just manageable. And being able to grow at that rate without having to hire salespeople, because they're hard people to manage as well.
No.
It's probably a godsend for us, right? It's good. That's how we've sort of grown and run our business.
And I love how you flipped it on its head from pretty much most aspects of a, let's call it, traditional model. And like you said, you've been able to not have the sales team because you've got a culture of everybody is in sales. So you do have a sales team. It's just that's everybody. And to your point, it's us.
Yeah.
So I have a question. I always ask about high-performing teams. You have several times in several of your answers come back to actually a lot of it's been about hiring the right people. And you talked about hiring on attitude. What are you looking for when you're hiring on attitude?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things, right? So when we're hiring on attitude, it's about belief. It's not arrogance, because you know there's a fine line between arrogance and belief, and belief in themselves. So being willing to back yourself, I was mentioning that before, is a really important thing for me. And so in the technical world, if you ask somebody from a technical world how to deliver a technical solution for a problem, when we ask those in interviews, some people kind of are nervous about saying the wrong thing and are really worried about, you know, giving the wrong answer, because they don't want to give the wrong answer, because technically they might not be, chosen to sort of proceed to the next step. But what we try to do is we try to give them a sense of just, this is a purely hypothetical, but think about what you would do to solve this problem and tell us how you feel about that. And what we do get is we get a sense of the people who are confident in themselves, confident that even if they don't have all of the details, that they can still deliver something that they are willing to back and believe in. So for us, it's all about that type of belief, and being able to say that, hey, I want to better myself and I want to extend what I'm doing rather than sit in a box. And so from that attitude of being able to, improve ourselves every day, every week, every year, and then also believe in what we're delivering, I think that's the real key thing for us in the people, right? And so, you know, there are people that can work well individually, as part of teams, you know, remotely, you know, in a group. All of those things are necessary. And again, like I said before, we've got lots of a diverse group of people, genders, you know, the whole thing, right? And so building that mix of people from different backgrounds, some from inside the industry, some from without, some starting out, some having been in it for a while. The core thing that I look for is their belief and willingness to either back themselves in a situation based on their experience or their knowledge, or that they're willing to learn and willing to kind of figure the thing out as they sort of get posed with these questions. And so we don't have all the answers, right? And, you know, sometimes we need to kind of sit there and butt heads with each other to figure out what we're doing. But when you've got a group that are willing to bring that to the table and they're willing to voice their opinion, and they feel confident and safe to be able to do that, then that's when you get some really interesting conversations where people are standing up and challenging, hey, Paulo, why do you do this? And I don't like the way that we're doing whatever. And I'm like, hey, that's just been the way that I've done it, because that's how, you know, we rolled when we started the business. And being challenged like that is a breath of fresh air, because sometimes, yeah, I get it wrong. And I don't know if I don't know anything different, then, hey, somebody needs to tell me. And so having people who are willing to challenge the establishment, challenge the way we do things for the betterment of our customers and our business is critical. So when they've got that belief, when they're willing to learn something new, when they're willing to get their hands dirty, you know, jump on a plane and deliver a monitor or a desktop, when that's not quote unquote their job, those are the things that set people apart.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So Paulo, I could talk to you all day clearly, but I have to let you go soon. So I have a final question for you. We'll have to do a part two, because I'm like, I've still got questions here. So final question for you. This is one for anyone who is in the IT industry who is listening. crystal ball predictions for 2023 for IT industry, because it's been so predictable over the past few years.
So again, all the macro and micro kind of inputs and you know aspects that you kind of look at, and from where I look and I try to consider. So getting out to analysts' events, listening to vendors, listening to my peers, other business owners and directors and people who run teams. 2023 is going to be a tough year. We think 2023 is going to be a challenging year. At the macro level, you've got inflation, the risk of recession, albeit we're bouncing out of the pandemic and the COVID sort of period, that specter is still kind of sitting in behind us a little bit. It's still kind of hovering, that it might still impact things. Here in Australia, you know, typically we've been, you know, able to kind of ride out dot-com waves and, you know, all the other things that have sort of happened in the history and in the past, because the market hasn't been that big. It's been fairly small, fairly sort of insular and away from the rest of the world. But I think that's changing more and more, and the impacts of US presidential runs and all that sort of stuff, inflation and Brexit in the UK, issues in, you know, the South China Sea, all of these things kind of play on people's minds. The thing that I do know, though, is that technology is not going to stand still, and customers' requirements and their need to service their outputs and their outcomes and their businesses isn't going away. If one thing was evident during the pandemic over the last couple of years in COVID, is that businesses need technology partners and providers like us more and more. What we have to be in sync with is being able to adjust and move and be flexible with the customer needs. So whether it's fulfilling products, delivering solutions, providing support, being there to consult and advise, all of those parts of the technology services provider like us, big or small, aren't going away. And so the requirements are going to maintain and sort of build. It's going to be more of that. The ongoing transformation to more and more digital, more and more hybrid cloud, more and more off-prem and remote, all of those things are happening. The move to solutions like as a service infrastructure, even in on-prem environments like Dell Apex or HP GreenLake and the like, all of those things are going to continue to grow and build. And so the requirement for partners with knowledge, skills, and the willingness to support customers is going to be there. So I'm optimistic, albeit in a cautious kind of way. The other thing that I'll say, and this is kind of a big thing, the skill shortage that there are across many industries, it's not going to like lessen and go away. Hopefully people will be coming in, will be able to get access to more people on the labor market. I think what we've seen even in recent times with the large IT fintechs and the like, shedding staff, closing down, you know, going bust, all of those things are putting more technical, highly skilled, what were highly paid individuals onto the market. And so we see more technical resources coming onto the market, layoffs in that whole space around, you know, dev, automation, cloud, all of those types of skills are going to be a little bit more able to be accessed. What we're also looking at trying to do is access more of the younger generation. So people coming out of university and schools who want a career in cyber, who want a career in networking. And so I think that the skill shortage is going to be a little bit more balanced. The high cost of employment for tech companies, where the real cost is in our technical teams, that's going to normalize a little bit. Maybe not to where it was a couple of years ago, but it's not going to be as astronomically high and difficult to hire, I hope, over the next 12 months. So again, in a roundabout convoluted way, we're confident, we're optimistic, but again, it's still going to be tough because of some of these, you know, issues and things that we can't deal with because they're external to Australia and external to the industry. But then also within the industry, I think there's still an opportunity for us to leverage and to take advantage of certain things that otherwise, we've not been able to in the recent years.
There you have it. Crystal ball predictions from Paulo.
Yeah.
Paulo, thank you so, so, so much. I am conscious of your time and that I need to let you go. We will definitely have to have a part two. I will pop your LinkedIn profile in the show notes and also the website for Olympus Tech if you guys want to connect with Paulo. Paulo, thank you so much. I love just and adore how you guys are turning things on its head. You're challenging. You're doing it differently. You're shaking it up. You challenge my thinking every time I speak to you. And watching your journey and your growth journey is just unbelievable. So congratulations on what you've built. And thank you so much for sharing some of it with us today.
Abby, it's been a real pleasure. As you know, I could probably talk all day as well, but thanks for having me. Happy to come back and have another chat at another point. If you need anything, please do reach out. And yeah, thanks for watching and for listening.
And I promise they do really do things for one. I phoned Paulo before to go, Paulo, hey, I know you're really busy and I know you've got this like really busy scaling business, but I need one laptop. And you helped.
All good, we're good. Thanks, all right, Paulo. Thanks, Abby.
Thank you for tuning in. If you'd like to receive the inside scoop on what is working right now in our highest performing campaigns, and likewise, what are the pitfalls to avoid directly to your inbox, then simply visit insidescoop.salesredefined.com.au to make sure that you receive our fortnightly newsletter with everything that you need to know to stay ahead of the pack directly to your inbox. And finally, before you leave us, don't forget to subscribe to Redefining Sales Podcast so that you never miss an episode. And if you enjoyed it, we would really, really appreciate it if you could leave us a comment or perhaps share it with a friend or colleague who you know would enjoy it. We'll see you next time.